All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guiding Lights. What I'm going to do is, the last time I was here, which was, I guess, 2 weeks ago. Was it really that long ago? It's hard to believe. I guess it was. Doesn't make sense because it seems like I was here in La Vida sitting in that little place that I rented. That was only a week ago, so I don't know. Anyway, the last time I was here, I went over one paragraph, and someone sent me an email that something she wanted to share based on that paragraph. So what I'd like to do first is just read the paragraph. This is the paragraph I went over last time, and then we'll go and look at her email. So this was the paragraph. Without the ego, we do not at first recognize the divine on its own ground, which ground seems only to be a great emptiness or void in ourselves. We keep looking for the divine on our own ego ground and cannot understand why it does not appear. We are in for a struggle here on every level of consciousness, and there will be no peace until all the energies, will, desires, and feelings have been totally submitted to the divine, a dark, unrecognized, silent void in ourselves. Submitting ourselves to this interior emptiness, virtually our own nothingness, is not easy. It requires an enormous faith. Indeed, the entire acclimating process will stretch the human limits. From this point on, we can no longer direct our own journey. We seem unable to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps or return to our previous comfortable state. The only thing we can really do is grin and bear it, suffer. In experience, it may feel as if a hole were being burned through the center of our being. So the last audio, we spent a whole half hour looking at that paragraph. But now what I'm going to do is share my screen and share an email I got after that. Hi, Regina. I'm not sure why I am writing you. I want to say the ladies, ignore the cute clothes on the side of the screen. I'm not sure why I am writing you. Something seems to want to write. Trust me, unless it is one or two sentences, a writer, I am not. I am just feeling to comment on the void in context to Bernadette Roberts and her experience expression of it in reference to my own. Although trust me when I say this, but I am not fully awakened. Identifying with experience is still there at times. Now back to the void. I had an experience many years ago where I was at work and suddenly, without any kind of warning, I was not. I will forego the details because there seemed to be many, so many seeming messages to me at the time. The curious thing is I do not look for this experience or try to relive it or reach for it in any way. But parts of it come to mind out of the blue, so to speak, as needed, maybe. One of the things that was revealed to me was whatever I put my attention on would come about in an experiential way. But before this show started, I noticed that there was nothing there, just a void, if I chose to see it as one. As I really looked or shifted my attention to openness, I could see there was something there. I am no void. Only I am, which is everything. I wonder if Bernadette, because of her own conditioning as a devout Christian, was seeing a void because her attention was on looking for her own understanding or conditioning of what God was or is. And so in order to let go of that, was shown that her idea of God was not there, but the I am was. And it took her some time to loosen or let go or see her concept of God was missing. Yet because of that, not see the I am. Holy Spirit meets us where we are at. Maybe I have not read far enough along in the book, but that is what it feels like to me at the moment. And maybe you have already spoken on this and I have simply missed it. If so, then this is just an echo. The other thing that came to mind about the void and a talk you had where you mentioned noticing things dropping away, like the anger or frustration you did not feel as the Awakening Together site seemed to be under cyber attack. She says, did you notice the I am? I have had similar things happen to me. In my case, I could see a void, a disconnect, if I chose to or not, and that is around my son, who had a kidney transplant 20 plus years ago now. He told me that for some time, the doctors the clinic attends have told him that they want him to go back on dialysis, as his blood work is showing that his transplanted kidney is failing. He said to me, I am not going that route. And for those of you who don't know what that means, that sentence, if he needs dialysis and he doesn't go on dialysis, it could mean that he will die. So for a mother to hear this, in most cases, there would be a lot of emotion, right? I recalled when he was first diagnosed with renal failure at the age of 12. He was so sick that at the time, the doctors told me all they could do in the next 24 hours would tell whether he would make it or not. All kinds of thoughts arose. One was how much I loved his faith. Something that came back to me after hearing you say husband's face. And just like that, I was in terror, panic, disbelief, and yet at the same time, something curious, a feeling that death was not an option. It was not a thought, but a peaceful, restful feeling, a knowing, a certainty. Although I did not understand it then, my focus was on the physical aspect. I felt reassured he would not die as a subtle change from he cannot die. At this point, I've heard people say under similar circumstances that they have felt totally abandoned by God, an empty feeling. I wonder if this can once again be the same feeling as the void. So now fast forward, so to speak. When he told me that he had decided not to have dialysis, there was no panic at all. A few thoughts came. One was that I was an unfeeling, uncaring mother. But I let go of that as quickly as it came. And another in the form of a question was, why am I not upset? Then once again, there was a feeling, a space, the same one I had 20 years plus back. The feeling of disconnection was impossible, came. Should his body seem to drop or not, nothing can separate me from him. It is an impossibility. The difference being he will not die never came to mind. This time he cannot die. It is impossible, came up. It was only upon reflection that I noticed the subtle change. So back to the void. It just feels that his could have come any time as a feeling of being totally abandoned by God or my idea, concept of what or who God is. Just wondering about your thoughts on this void and whether you have seen it as a choice, depending on where you put your attention. Because the I am is ever present. And that's from Krishna. I don't know how to say her name. Krishna. I don't know how to say her name, but there it is right there. With much love and gratitude for all you do. So I'll stop my share and take a drink of water. So, you know, the void is an interesting question, because she's saying, basically, is it possible that the concepts of God, for example, were gone, but the I am was there, so there was not a void, but the Bernadette simply didn't notice it. Oh, Don's saying that my bandwidth is breaking up a lot. Yeah, well, I think Jacqueline turned off her video, but that's about all we can do. So I apologize if it's breaking up a lot. How do I sound now? Okay, good. Yeah, Jacqueline and I are both on the computer in separate rooms, so that could be part of the problem. And we're in La Vida with CenturyLink, so that's another part of the problem. It's difficult for me to talk about the void because, you know, you never know what somebody else's experiences are. As I talked about last week, what I notice is there's emptiness in me that didn't used to be there. And whether that's what people mean by the void or not, you know, I can't really say. I do know that... if there is a void, like if you say there is a void, then there's a witness to that void, right? Which would be the I am. And if the witness is there, well, then it isn't really a void. But the void is an experience. It's an experience of where something was, now nothing is. And I love that she talked about with her son, him saying that he's not going to go on dialysis and knowing that could mean physical death, right? And she talked about having no fear over that. And of course, then the thought came in that she was an uncaring mother and she let that go and that kind of thing. The judgment thoughts, the saboteur, as we just saw in the previous. But as the person thins out, again, the feelings that the person experienced, they thin out too. You know, when I first started the spiritual path, or actually it's before I started the spiritual path to some degree, it's when I was reading Peace Pilgrim. It was many years ago, long before I had Jasmine. And Peace Pilgrim talked about oneness, and I had never even heard of that before. That was completely new to me at that time. And she talked about how everything was one. And I couldn't understand that because, you know, the eyes show something different, right? Like there, here's a body, here's a chair, you know, up here is a picture, right? There's some lines, you know, what I seemed to see was separate things and separate people. So I didn't understand. And one day I was walking into work and I was just asking myself, you know, what is this oneness thing? You know, how could that be? And I had this vision. This was my first vision. And in the vision, there was this infinite light. And on top of the light, in one particular spot, there were these polka dots, black polka dots, right? And where the polka dots were, they all kind of overlapped. So where the polka dots were, the light was covered. You couldn't see the light. But some of those polka dots were beginning to fade. And where the polka dots were beginning to fade, there was some light shining through. And then there were a couple of places in this cluster of polka dots where there was pure light where a polka dot used to be. And then, you know, the polka dot had faded completely and there was pure light. And there were no words with this, and I didn't have, you know, the spiritual language that I have now, so I had no words to put to it. But I understood it perfectly. And in fact, I ran right into my office and I drew a picture of it so that I wouldn't forget. And I made it my screen background on my computer for a couple of years. But I understood it exactly. I understood that the black polka dot was the person or the belief in me and all of the ideas and concepts that make up me. And I understood that when those ideas and concepts began to die, it was like part of the polka dot would fade away. And where there used to be, you know, certain ideas, concepts, identifications, there was now nothing. And because there was nothing, the light could shine through. And that's why some polka dots, it's almost like they had little holes in them, but it had, you know, It's where the person concept was falling apart. And there were holes. It's important to say that. Nothing. There were holes in the polka dot. And where there were holes, the light was shining through. And then again, there were some spaces where there had once upon a time been a polka dot. And the entire polka dot had faded. So in those spots, there was just pure light coming through. So if we think of the polka dot as something, right, and the holes in the polka dot as nothing, then those holes would be called a void. And certainly where there used to be a polka dot, and now the entire polka dot is gone, you know, it's nothing but a complete void. And yet the light is there, right? So what is the light? You know, the light is our true self. And you might call that the I am at some points on this journey. But I think if you follow the journey far enough, even the I am disappears, which creates the greater void. And yet the absolute, the truth of what you are, is still present. So I think maybe the bottom line is it's helpful not to be afraid of nothing. Does that sentence make any sense? I don't know if my English teacher would go for it. But it's helpful not to be afraid of nothing. You know, people who really, really think that they're a person can be very afraid of the word nothing. I've had more than one person write to me in my 15 years or so as a spiritual teacher commenting on how fearful the word nothing is. But nothing equals the light, right? Nothing equals the truth. Something equals the polka dot that's covering the light. And again, when the something is there, you know, the something is really all made up of concepts and attachments, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So when the something is there, you know, you can be getting upset all the time. And in fact, most people do all day long, over and over again in different ways, right? You can be getting upset all the time because all of these beliefs and desires and fears and attachments, they can keep getting hit up against and keep getting triggered, right? So you're upset all the time. But as these things disappear, they don't get hit up against anymore. They're not, because they're not there. How can you hit up against nothing? And so what do you end up with? You just end up with peace or happiness or contentment. And yeah, Kathy is remembering the pinhole and the Kleenex. And yeah, Kathy, I was thinking of the pinhole and the Kleenex too. I think rather than being afraid of nothing, it would be better to pray for nothing. You know, and if we look at Meg's, in fact, it says in NTI, it asks you to pray for the end of you. Right? And that's the something it's referring to, of course. And this morning when Meg was sharing about daydreaming, you know, I have daydreamed about what it's like to be nothing. No, I have. It's interesting because I played a little meditation at the retreat last week, and after Meg's sermon this morning, I thought, you know, we might have some extra time this week because the weather here is not allowing the field trips I plan. So I might have some extra time. And so I was contemplating this morning when she was sharing that maybe I'll play this video again. The video was called What is Enlightenment Like? It was a little meditation, a little awareness game meditation. And I thought maybe I'll play that again using Meg's spin on it, that, you know, what if you contemplate during this meditation what enlightenment is like and then daydream yourself being like that? You know, one of the things that I described after we listened to the meditation this week was, for me, when I was listening to the meditation, he's asking you questions and you're, you know, finding the answer to the questions within yourself. They're all questions about what is enlightenment like, but they're more specific. what I saw was, you know, the way I described it was just eyes. You know, we might call that just awareness. Like there was nothing here to get hit upon. There was nothing here. And you could also call that a void. You might also call that the I am, right? I called it after the meditation, just eyes. And because I had the sense of just eyes, and because I often have the experience of just eyes is something I can daydream about. Right? I can daydream about just eyes, which is literally daydreaming about being nothing. And the words just stopped. There's only 5 minutes left, so I think what I'll ask is, does anybody have anything they want to share?
Regina, when you were talking about the just eyes.
Yes.
When Byron Katie woke up in the morning, she actually called it it. And it had these eyes like that, but they weren't eyes. They were like this, she didn't describe it. It's just these two its that were looking out, and she just cracked up laughing. Yeah, so I'm assuming at that point she wasn't the body, right? Because she saw this just nothingness, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't even understand how it happened, but I did hear her say it was just these eyes, and she just couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, just eyes is a lot of fun. In fact, although most people aren't aware of it, everyone has experienced it at some point in their life. You know, like back when I used to work in corporate America, I've always had good jobs where I had, you know, at least 30 days, at least 4 weeks of vacation a year, and sometimes 6 weeks of vacation a year. I've never had, ever since I've been out of high school, I've never had a job where I had 1 or 2 weeks of vacation. And that was important because on my vacations, you know, I would go places and I literally on vacation would become just eyes. You know, and I didn't realize it then, but I mean, I'd just be in awareness. I would drop all thought, all expectations. I would just observe and just play and just have fun. And then I would come back to work and I would take everything on again. And I would think it was the vacation that made me happy, right? So I would start planning my next vacation immediately. And then I would go on my next vacation somewhere and I would become the just eyes again. You know, and some people, like when they're, that's why they love sports. You know, they call it being in the zone. And some people, this is why they love fishing. And some people, this is why they love gardening. And some people, this is why they love cooking. You know, even teaching, for me, it's always happened during teaching. It's when you are nothing but the awareness and the spontaneous moment. The spontaneous moment is the movement, and the awareness is the just eyes. It's just that most people add something to that, and what they add to that is belief and thought. And when you add belief and thought to the spontaneous moment and to the awareness or to the just eyes, you add everything that you need to add in order to be afraid, in order to be very emotionally upset, you know, triggered, in order to feel unworthy, guilty, suffering. You know, you add all of that when you add thought. If you are just the spontaneous moment, and just eyes, which is an emptiness, right? It's an absolute emptiness. It's a nothingness. Then you can only be happy. Anyone else have anything they want to share? We have 1 minute left. All right, well, I didn't even get to Bernadette tonight, but that's okay. I will be back next week and we'll continue with her. So yeah, daydreaming about being nothing. And I'm going to release the mic.